Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Statues and monuments linked to slavery are being taken down, sometimes forcefully by protesters themselves all across the country. People are grappling with monuments and street names that memorialize a painful history. Earlier this month, protesters turned to vandalize the statues of Spanish conquistadors Christopher Columbus and Juan Ponce de Leon at Bayside Marketplace in Miami, bringing to the forefront a debate about what these statues signify and where they belong. So we've assembled a panel to discuss this topic. Joining me now, Dr. Andrea Quigley. She's an associate professor at Florida International University, teaching anthropology in African and African diaspora studies. Dr. Quigley, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is from FIU is Dr. Dan Royals, an assistant professor of United States and African American history. Dr. Royals, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Paul George joins us as well, a resident historian at History Miami Museum. Dr. George, I appreciate the time today.
Thanks so much. It's good to be here.
I wanted to get one general question out to all of you. Just briefly, I wanted your thoughts about statues and monuments and what's the role that they actually play in our society. Dr. Quigley, let me start with you.
So this is, of course, a fantastic question because it really gets at this the heart of the question of history, right? And how it is that we understand history and the making of history and who it is and that we consider deserving of being memorialized publicly, in particular with regards to the monuments. So in history, you know, as Michel Rauf-Trouillot is an anthropologist, who Haitian anthropologist, who said that, you know, history is what's happened and what's said to have happened, right? And so there's a kind of privileging of particular narratives. And I think that we see that in the landscape, right? We see that in the choices around which people, which individuals, historical figures get memorialized and why.
Yeah. Dr. Royals, I mean, same question to you, but I mean, I think about what's the role of a statue or monument considering a nation's going to change over time?
I want to build on what Dr. Quigley said, and it's that statues and monuments build particular understandings of the past into our everyday landscapes. And they do that in a way that conceals or subsumes the particular histories and power relationships that are behind them. So we see this, for example, with the Confederate statues and monuments that are being, you know, have been and are being now hotly contested, because those statues and monuments build a kind of naturalized understanding of the histories that they represent into our everyday landscape. They make those things seem everyday, make them seem neutral, make them, you know, divorce them from historical context. And so what we really need is a more critical, contextualized understanding of the past, you know, beyond what statues and monuments often can provide.
Yeah. Dr. George, how about you? I mean, why do we need statues and monuments? What's the role?
Well, they really speak to whoever's depicted in a statue or monument. It speaks to what that person represented in terms of both ideas and action at the time that she or he was on the planet. The problem that we've long had, and I think that some of our other panelists have mentioned too, is that there's just not enough context with the statue. I mean, to look at a statue, and I love that phrase, everyday landscape. I think it's so appropriate because the statue literally and figuratively rises above it. But to look at a person on the part of, just say, an average onlooker in a park or in a public plaza or a square or something may not really obviously have a deep understanding and idea of that person's role in history at that time. The person, of course, was on the planet. I've always thought that we need more context. That can come to some degree, maybe a limited degree, with historical markers. But I think an ideal place, I'm not saying move every statue into a museum, but an ideal place really to understand historical context would be in a museum where, you know, you have the ability to really kind of lay out the story, probably all facets of the story, about who's ever being depicted on a monument or a statue. But again, getting
beyond having just a plaque that gives you a little bit of history, there's a lot of history, as I'm hearing from all of you. There's just a lot that you have to understand about that person. Let me move forward here on this conversation about what we have in South Florida. Not a lot of Confederate statues. We do have street names and city names with a Confederate past, but we do have Spanish and European conquerors and explorers. Again, Ponce de Leon and Christopher Columbus. Now they're being attacked. Dr. George, how did we end up with statues of Ponce de Leon and Columbus here? What the role they played in our community?
Well, it's a terrific question. And we ended up that way because, A, Columbus's landing site was within 50 to 80 or 100 miles where we are right now. B, Juan Ponce de Leon may have touched down at Key Biscayne in 1513, by then late spring, but most of his contact was actually around the southwest coast of Florida, where he remained for a while and got to know some of the Native Americans there, the Colusas. But the reason they're there, in addition to the fact that there's this connection with Florida, real tangential in the case of Columbus, a little more closely associated, of course, on the part of Juan Ponce, is because Miami had began to position itself as a gateway to the Americas, at least as far back as the 30s. And you can make a case when William Jennings Bryan, about 1916, he was probably our leading citizen since he was so prominent, talked about a future university from Miami. And the names going around at that point was Pan American University. Out of that, of course, grew the idea and the reality of the University of Miami. But what happened in subsequent decades, and again, leaning toward this idea of a gateway to the Americas, a nexus between the Americas, we began to really talk about that. We're going to build a big convention center in the DuPont Plaza neighborhood that would be a Pan-American center. We began to put busts of Latin American and Caribbean leaders on little pedestals in Bayfront Park. The Columbus statue was dedicated on Columbus Day, 1953. Juan Ponce came somewhere in that time. And again, it was positioning ourselves. That's why Juan Ponce is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, all right. So, I mean, again, a lot of history. I apologize. I'm going to cut in from time to time. There's a lot of history here. So that, I mean, again, these are two men who played a big part in the Caribbean history and in Southeast United States history. But Dr. Quealy, I wonder the connection people here have to these two men compared to what you see with people's connection with the Confederacy. I mean, are the people of the Caribbean as connected to Columbus and Ponce de Leon?
That's a wonderful question. So what comes up, I think, in this conversation, one of the things that we have to understand, again, is that Ponce de Leon, Columbus, they exist and have existed within the context of the hypervalorization of the conquistadores, right? And so we know their names, right? But do we know the names of all the indigenous people who, were whose land upon which we stand, right? And this kind of question of what the connection is that people have to them, I think you have to look at it through that lens. So there's a people who have been taught to valorize Europeans, to valorize their European, their Spanish ancestry over their indigenous and African ancestry oftentimes. And so having that connection is not neutral. I think my colleague Dan Royals was saying that there's a kind of lack of neutrality, right? Or a guise of neutrality when it's really not neutral because it exists within the context of European conquest, colonization, and white supremacy.
So it just seems like it's still more about education. Again, not the monuments, it's just the education. Because again, so much context, so much history. Dr. Mm-hmm. Royals, I mean, I'm curious too about, again, we hear the debate about getting rid of the Confederate monuments and statues because of that link to our racist past. There is a dark side to the past for the conquistadors. But people will argue, well, that doesn't link to the history of racism today. What do you think about that part of the debate?
I mean, a couple of things that I want to say here. One is that we're talking about the memorialization of conquistadores and Confederate monuments as though they are two separate but maybe tangentially related issues. And I think that they're not. So going back to the example of Columbus, the history of the celebration of the Columbus story or really the Columbus myth. And the United States is connected in important ways to the way that in the late 19th century, new immigrants, so Italians, Irish, were able to lay claim to whiteness because when they arrived in the United States, they were considered kind of off-white or liminally white, somewhere between black and white. And the celebration of the Columbus story and the Columbus myth was really part and parcel of the way that they wrote themselves into a white supremacist national history. At the same time that groups like the United Daughters of the Confederacy were promulgating a false narrative about the causes of the Civil War, were promulgating what we call the lost cause myth of Civil War history. This is the idea, a very romantic idea about the Confederacy, what the antebellum South was. This is the kind of Moonlight and Magnolias, benevolent slave master vision.
And you know what? But Dr. Rose, that's it. You said something interesting there, is the romanticization of our past. Have we done that with people like Ponce de Leon and Columbus?
Absolutely. There's no question. There's no question about that. But so I also want to just push back on one thing in particular, and that is the idea that, we are somehow outside of that Confederate memorialization. We see maybe less evidence of that in Miami, although we do have Dixie Highway running through.
Running right through
Miami.
We have roads. You're right. No, we have a number of, it's not, it, I just want to say like, it, it's not compared to, as I've traveled through places like Louisiana or, South North Carolina, places like that, it's very different. But we've been hearing from listeners, by the way, on this topic on Twitter. Sam Thiepen Bermeo tweeted out to us this: Columbus enslaved so many Native Americans by 1499 that Queen Isabella exploded at him, saying, "Who is this Columbus who dares to give out my vassals as slaves?" This mass dehumanization, even unlawful at the time, still matters today. By the way, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Dr. Quealy, what is the history behind what he's saying about the Spanish monarchy criticizing the slavery?
So actually, it's interesting because I'm not familiar with that particular criticism, right? But this gets back to the point, it gets back to what it is that I think both Dan and I were saying, which is that there's a process that has happened, which has kind of siloed, Spanish history from, English history, the various European powers, and the ways in which history is taught is that, oh, that's something that's separate, right? So, this kind of conquering, or what is said as the discovery, right, of the quote-unquote New World is separate from the enslavement of Africans, right? That's what you're taught. But as the Twitter person, the person who tweeted, pointed out, that actually they're very, they're absolutely worked in conjunction with one another, right? So the conversation about enslavement must also include indigenous people.
People will talk about their heritage and their link to their heritage when they talk about the South. I'm wondering, Dr. George, with the Hispanic communities, the Latino communities here in South Florida, what is their link to, to Columbus, to Ponce de Leon? How do they view these people? Is it something you could say that really they look at them differently than perhaps white Americans do?
Well, I don't think there's a strong attachment at this time to either of them. And I think in a general sense, that is the way it is across the United States. Let me just offer one thing. I was doing some research on another topic the other day, and Miami Herald 1955, Mayor Abramovitz on Columbus Day asked every Miamian to take several moments of silence and think about the great contributions Christopher Columbus made to the New World. And you can imagine today what that would be like. We had a huge Chicago white city in 1893 centered around the 400th anniversary of Columbus. In 1992, at best, the celebrations were muted. Hardly anything was going on. So I think that he has really escaped, in terms of a positive force, our imaginations and our memories today. Juan Ponce would be much more of a regional figure, and it really speaks to Florida. but I just don't think it's either one is a topic that comes up much in Spanish-speaking or Hispanic communities in greater Miami or Florida. It's something that time has kind of passed by. But then again, I think so many statues of people are experiencing that too in the society we live in. Except now we're within a certain urgency maybe to kind of reevaluate these things and decide to do something about them.
Again, we are talking about statues and monuments. Now, a lot of the debate we're hearing is about Confederate statues and monuments, but there's been conversation about people like Christopher Columbus or Ponce de Leon. Should we have these statues and monuments up, or do we need them in museums? Again, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you think. Again, I'm talking with a panel of historians, Dr. Andrea Quigley, an associate professor at Florida International University, Dr. Dan Royals, an assistant professor of United States and African American History, and Dr. Paul George, a resident historian at History Miami Museum. Dr. Quigley, where do we go from here when it comes to these particular, these monuments? When you talk about Columbus and Ponce de Leon or other conquistadors, you know, earlier American history, what should we do with them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great question. I'm actually not a historian, by the way. I'm an anthropologist.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you for the correction.
Okay. But I've thought about this question. What is the kind of society that I would envision that I would want to live in? What would they do, right, with these statues, with these monuments? And so one of the obvious answers to that question is, of course, having, you know, putting them in museums, right, so they can actually be used as tools for education. I also thought about having, because I believe that this is a part of, and I'm hoping that we're on the brink of some kind of process of truth and reconciliation nationally, and wondering whether or not an actual burial, right, of these statues would be appropriate. Having some kind of symbolic ritual that would kind of signal that we are embarking upon a new chapter within this country, right? So I think that there are different possibilities, right? And I think that we have to kind of, as a society, decide who it is that we want to be, right? How is it that we might want to honor the actual tenets that this, you know, this country, the United States, is supposed to be about?
Let me push back on you a little bit on that. I'm wondering, have you seen that happen somewhere else where they did that to their statues and monuments?
No. So maybe we would be the first. But there are different countries that have had truth and reconciliation commissions. And so maybe there is some record of ideas or processes that they've gone through to deal with the physical kind of remnants of their past. Right, and reckoning with their past.
Dr. George, what about you? I mean, what should happen to these monuments? And I wonder, like, you think about other countries where they look at their past and maybe don't want at least that past to be out in the open because it's kind of dark.
Right. Well, you know, there's been so many different approaches to this, so many different actions. Some have been destroyed, others have been vandalized. Others have been subject to demands, let's get them out of here. Teddy Roosevelt mounted on a horse above a Native American and an African American, apparently going to be moved back into the Museum of Natural History in New York City. So there's so many different looks, but as somebody who represents history in Miami, I just think it's important that, A, we don't totally destroy a statue. Having it moved, yeah, that's reality, because I think it's really a learning thing. One of our panelists mentioned that too. We bring a lot of youngsters into the museum every year with our education department. And I just think it's a good teaching experience. If you could bring someone in and there is a statue that's been moved from somewhere to, say, the museum, and you can talk about the life of that person succinctly, obviously, looking at both the good and the bad part. And I just think they're important in that respect too. But obviously there are lightning rods now and have been for a good while for so much controversy, but there's been so many different approaches. And I still think we're kind of like in the early stages of what to do with these things. I was kind of pushed when I saw the statue of that slave trader in England. I think it was in Bristol that was thrown into the sea. I would have rather have had it preserved somewhere with, you know, the proper description of his life and what he represented, much of which would have been negative.
Yeah. Dr. Royals, I mean, again, because it's our history, whether we like it or not. And I always think about like how Germans have to deal with their history, within the last century. It's there. You can't erase it, but how should we be approaching this?
So I've spent the most time thinking about what to do with Confederate monuments. And Civil War historians have proposed a kind of intervention here that I think would be useful for the conquistador statues as well. You know, we can move these statues into museums where they can be much more appropriately contextualized. But I want to be clear on the point that these should not be displayed in public in the way that they are now. What we can do is to leave the pedestals in place, stripped of any celebration of Confederate leaders, of the Confederacy itself, and contextualize the empty place where the statue used to stand. I think that would be a really powerful testament to the way that we, I want to say that we have moved on as a country, but I don't think that's true. But I think it could be a really powerful testament to the kind of country that we want to be.
Yeah. Let me just jump in as we finish up here.
That we have this ugly past that we need to grapple with.
Right. I just wanted to get to one more thing real quick. We did hear, we're getting comments from people. We did hear from Sean Patrick Perez on Facebook shared a quote from the book 1984 by George Orwell, the one that says, "Every statue and street building has been renamed, every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped." Very interesting quote to share. Dr. Quigley, what can we take away from this moment of historic reckoning?
Yeah, I want to respond to that caller because I think he represents that idea, represents something that other people are concerned about, right? And I think you alluded to it. We have this dark past, and so we're hiding it. And that's not what at all we're proposing, right? I want to be really clear. It's about the distinction between revering a particular individual and actually contextualizing them, right? So what is it that we're choosing to revere? This is not a 1984 scenario where we're reworking or rewriting, right, the past. We're actually trying to move towards a more just and accurate depiction of historical realities, right? And in order to kind of again approximate or approach that, there has to be more context. There has to be a kind of a more honest appraisal of the impact and the legacy that's being celebrated.
That is an interesting point. This is a fascinating debate. I have to end it on that because of time, but history is always such an interesting thing because you know what? We think we have it figured out. We really haven't. I used to be a history major, but anyway, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Andrea Quigley, Associate Professor at Florida International University of Anthropology, Dr. Dan Royals, Assistant Professor of United States and African American History, and Dr. Paul George, Resident Historian at History Miami Museum. Folks, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, still to come, we're going to talk with a professor who teaches a course in happiness and try to figure out how to find happiness in these difficult times.